Welcome to our Pinellas County Schools podcast, where we celebrate great teachers and the great teaching that is going on in our schools, and we identify those aha moments that have really had our students master their learning. I'm Jolene Jackson, and I am the Director of Professional Development, and I have my co-host here with me today.
Hi, I'm Holly Slaughter. I am the specialist for K-5 ELA. And I have invited two fabulous educators here today. They are going to help us and our listeners have some aha moments about high-yield instructional strategies such as summarizing, note-taking, transforming notes. And if you're not into those high-yield strategies now, by the end of this podcast, you will be hungry for more.
Oh, yeah.
Carrie, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Carrie Greetham. I'm the middle school ELA content specialist.
Hi, I'm Tracy Smith, and I teach sixth grade at Eastlake Middle School.
All right. Well, welcome, and thank you so much for being here today. We are going to talk about note-taking, which you said, and so this is really an art form, yeah?
Yeah, so listen, let's delve into a topic that is crucial for learning. Note-taking, summarizing, and reflecting. And summarizing and note-taking, they're much more than just transcribing what the teacher says, right? It's definitely an art form.
It is, and that's where we really get to get out our pens and our text and our highlighters and all maybe some tech tools that you use if we're looking at text on the computer. And really, sometimes like kids can start to feel like it's a chore, right? And so when we start to make it this art form that kids can really adapt to and bring in their own tools for note-taking, then it can actually become kind of fun. We're here today to hear also about like transforming those notes. And I think a lot of times in the past, I mean, I haven't used it much as a teacher, so I'm really excited to be here mostly as a learner from you all today. And really transforming those notes, like taking them. We're not just taking notes for the sake of taking notes, but we're actually taking notes to transform them into something where we're applying our learning, applying our thinking, which the effect size on note-taking is 0.63.
Wow.
Alone.
That's great.
Yeah, that's great. And for our listeners who are out there who may not know what effect size means, anything above a 0.4 means it's really going to move our learners and they're going to have more likelihood to have greater gains in a school year. And so 0.63 is great. But here's the kicker. We can stop at the notes or we can take the notes and put them into Socratic seminars. We can put them into writing projects, all these sort of things. And that has a 0.83 effect size. So, wow. Like, listeners, tune in because you really want your kids to be utilizing this strategy so you can have really great gains.
Let's get started.
Yeah, let's go ahead and get started.
Let me throw a question out to you all. Okay. So I'm going to mention some of these high-yield instructional strategies that we've been talking about, right? Summarizing, note-taking, transforming notes, taking those plans to drafts, Socratic seminars, like Jolene mentioned. What are some of your go-to strategies that are working for you right now in middle school?
So right now, we are currently working on taking an essay and rewriting it. So we've gone back through the entire process of essay writing just to help the kids get back on track. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that we do is teaching the students like a process helps them understand it better. So once we analyze a prompt, and you know you have to read the articles in order to write about it knowledgeably.
Sure.
So once we read the articles and we do a plan sheet, mm-hmm. and we use the old style, which we would use in elementary school, the boxes and bullets, we still use it. That really helps the students. But what we do now is since a majority of the state assessments are computer-based now, mm-hmm. it makes it quite difficult. You can't get out your highlighters. You can't mm-hmm. on the computer. They have highlighting tools. They have the little note box, but it's not the same as writing right on the document. So we taught the students how to flip their paper over and create like a three-column chart, one for each source. And as they're taking notes, they're constantly in the mindset of whatever the prompt is asking, and they're taking notes for that. And then they've learned how to connect those texts, make patterns across those texts to create their central idea. And then that's how they can then plan their essays and then develop their essays and write about them. So it works really well. The kids, you know, the students that didn't have that background of using those from different elementary schools or different teachers or whatever, they've come in and they're like, wow, this really helps. This helps me understand like what I'm writing about. Now I know what goes in each middle paragraph. I know how to start my introduction. I know what I'm going to say. This just makes it clear. And so we've taught the kids, like, if you don't plan, you're not going to score well. So you have to plan, and you can use this from now all through your senior year. You're going to be writing essays forever.
Sure. And even with the computer-based testing, they're allowed a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that you're making good use of that. Mm-hmm. And just to sort of like add on, I jokingly always say to teachers, if kids start drafting without a plan, I call it vomit on the page, right? Because that's essentially what happens. It's just kind of like they're just blah.
It's just disorganized.
Right.
You have to have that organizational piece.
Absolutely.
So a lot of the kids were like, wow, this works. So it's kind of neat to see them get excited because they're like, this makes so much more sense.
Yeah.
And you're like, told ya.
And not only that, but they have learned some of the same note-taking strategies all the way from, like at that point, third grade all the way now through eighth grade. So these go-to strategies that we have, there's a really smooth transition into middle school, which I think they're also getting really excited about, that they recognize those things. But I was thinking about the part about transforming the notes and getting the kids to take their notes and actually use like the application of the information on the page. And today I was working with an amazing group of sixth graders all day long, and we are knee deep in a very lengthy text. And they've been looking at this text with two lenses. One, the character interactions that contribute to the plot. And one, the figurative language and how it affects meaning and tone. And so they love getting the color highlighters. Mm-hmm. But naturally, they want to highlight every line and every sentence. They're like, this is a character interaction. This is a character interaction. But it's really telling for the teacher what they're highlighting. I mean, first of all, you're not highlighting figurative language. We got to stop there. But also being able to tap into, you know, if we're highlighting every single character interaction, then we don't really understand what's interaction that contributes to the plot and how it moves that story forward. So it gives us some information on how to confer with them, how to pull small groups with them. And then they get very excited when they nail it because they are really savvy at identifying. They can identify all the livelong day, but as soon as we start asking those how and why questions, it starts to, like, we're kind of murmuring and mumbling, which is a beautiful place, that place of struggle, because then we know how to coach in and how to support them in that. And so today, once we saw what they were highlighting with their figurative language or with their character interactions, then it gives us some ways to empower them to be like, so you found that figurative language and you see that the authors personified the wall or whatever it was. Why did the author do that? What effect does it have? How did that change the tone? How did the tone shift? Mm-hmm. And so I think it, just as much as it's a tool for kids to be able to use their note and help frame and set a purpose for their reading or writing, whatever it is, in the same way that essay plan gives us some idea of, okay, are we organizing? Are we pulling relevant evidence? Same applies for our reading benchmarks. What kind of questions can we ask them, and how can we use those notes to amp up our teaching?
Mm-hmm. So. Well, that was in our last podcast. We were talking about close reading, which, you know, you're taking a look at their notes as they're reading or marking up text or engaging with content. But again, this is also a formative assessment.
Absolutely.
And so you're able to have teachable moments. Mm. And that's an aha for me, like listening to this. And I think so many times I hear people talking about formative assessments, and they're talking about really even post-lesson. But this is like in the moment, and then you're able to start scaffolding right there those questions to get them to think. So, yeah, that's amazing.
I want to follow up with the note-taking. So you talked about, Tracy, on the plan sheet, right? They're making columns, and they're noting in the columns. what are your expectations, or what are you teaching them to note and notice as they're reading their sources? Because I know sometimes we grapple with kids just sort of copy mm-hmm. what's already in the text, mm-hmm. right? So talk a little bit about how that goes.
I think it depends on the task at hand. Mm-hmm. So, for example, for like an essay, mm-hmm. They have to follow the prompt. So if they're writing an essay, they should be looking through the text, looking for answers or ways that are going to help them answer what the prompt is asking. And when they read the text, they need to read the text to get the gist. That's why we always teach the students, for the purpose of writing, you read the prompt first, mm-hmm. so you know what you're looking for.
Sure.
Then when they take the notes and they jot them down, we're not copying full paragraphs. We're not copying, you know, lengthy sentences. We're just writing down like the source that it's from. If it's written out in columns, then you write it under the column for that source. And then you can write like P5 or yes. paragraph 5. Okay. And then it's just quick jotted notes like this, you know, boom, 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 like 3-4 words, quick jotted notes, quick, quick, quick. And then when you're done, then you can sit back and you can look at that text across all three. So if you're looking for patterns across three articles, then you can create a central idea from all of those. So that's taking
that synthesis work, right?
Yes, that integrating your evidence in, mm-hmm. into your evidence. But it's letting them see that there's more than one article on the same topic, and they have to be able to process that in order to answer a separate question. Mm-hmm. And like, for example, today I told them, when you're looking for this evidence in your articles, it's not going to come right out and say, like in elementary school, you know, it's not going to come right out and say, oh, well, this is how it helps animals in the environment.
Sure.
You have to look for that. Right. You have to make that connection. Yes, you have to infer, you have to make that inference and then write it down. And then when you're planning and you create your central ideas and you use that piece of evidence as your elaboration, you're adding on to explain, how does it tie it back to the prompt? Mm-hmm. How is it impacting animals in their environment or whatever the prompt was about? So
wonderful. So I am here with three ELA literacy specialists and teachers and your specialists as well at your craft. But we do have listeners who tune in to our podcast who are not teaching ELA. And so many times I've heard that these strategies are great for ELA teachers, but I don't see that they're not for me. So I know I'm going to ask you, like, for just a moment to step out mm-hmm. of ELA and imagine being a math teacher, yeah. a science teacher, mm-hmm. social studies, art, music, any content. And how would you see these strategies being utilized and having an impact in any content?
So this is, you're asking me to be another, put on another brain kind of way of thinking for the second day in a row, because yesterday we brought, yesterday evening, about 45 teachers, maybe half of them were ELA teachers and half of them were science teachers in middle mm-hmm. school. And it was called When the Text Gets Tough. And mm-hmm. we looked at strategies that, first of all, we looked at what makes a text complex. And then mm-hmm. we looked at, okay, so what behavior, skills, and strategies are students needing to employ, or just humans that need mm-hmm. to employ to be able to access content in these complex texts. And then we talked about the reciprocity between the reading and the writing and all literacy across the content areas. Mm-hmm. So all within, you know, an hour and mm-hmm. a half.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. We solved all
did
the
it
problems.
All. Did it all.
But I will say it was extremely cool for me uh-huh. to watch the light bulbs go off for the science teachers, yes. but then also for the ELA teachers to get a little peek into the things that they're doing in science and how nicely, like in elementary, we have the benefit of, we are the science mm-hmm. and the social studies and the math teacher yep. and the ELA teacher. So we can kind of do that natural cross content work, where in middle school, we're very much isolated to just our content area. But when it comes to any of it, one of the things we talked about yesterday was purpose. I mean, the kids have to know the purpose, the why behind what they're doing, whether it's we're note-taking or we're summarizing or whatever the task is that –
What's the outcome?
What's the outcome?
Yeah.
You know, and it goes back to teacher clarity, which I know we've talked about at, you know, at length. But and I think that that's what bridges the whole thing together.
Mm-hmm. I think to add on to that, I know the history teacher that's in the classroom right next to me, he has, just like how we have an ELA notebook, an interactive notebook, he has a interactive notebook for history. Mm-hmm. And they do a lot of complex text reading. Absolutely. On history content. And I know he has tons of things that he uses, and all of them are like, I'm like, hey, I use that reading strategy. And he's like, yeah. So a lot of the things he's learned through his college and things like that, reading strategies, and he's implementing them into his history teaching, because he's using close read things. He's using strategies, graphic organizers, to understand the content that the kids are reading. Because a lot of times that is hard to read. It's tricky, and it's the kids are not comfortable with reading that information.
Mm-hmm. So. And I would add, you know, this whole notion that writing is a tool for thinking,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? And it's a power tool. Mm. So it's not just for the ELA teacher. It's definitely a power tool for the science teacher, for the history teacher. So much happens when we write. Mm-hmm. And it's a tool, it's a reflective tool, it's mm-hmm. a discovery tool, it's a tool yes. for understanding, it's an aha moment tool, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes when I write, mm-hmm. I didn't even realize I knew what I knew until it came out on the page. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes when I write, it's a tool for clarity to help me understand. I thought I knew, mm-hmm. but when I went to summarize the text, I realized there were gaps in my understanding, and then that causes me to have to go back, and it's such a power tool.
Mm-hmm.
And I know our teachers, our history teachers and science teachers.
And our math teachers.
And our math teachers, understand the power mm-hmm. of writing for all of those purposes, reflection, right, thinking, understanding, clarity. And the beautiful part is the formative assessment. Mm-hmm. Because in a short time, in a one-minute write, in a one-minute jot, if I'm a history teacher, I can ascertain what a student knows, understands, mm-hmm. where the gaps are mm-hmm. Through studying their writing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a power tool.
Right. It's as you were speaking, I could just see, like, it's a window.
Absolutely.
Into their minds. Yes. And their thinking.
Yes.
And then for them, it's a mirror back. Mm-hmm. So it's like I've just seen this visual of like a windows and mirrors into our thinking.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I want to follow up because we mentioned, I don't know which one of you mentioned, but this whole idea of relevance and engagement. And I taught middle school for a little bitty bit. I had two daughters who were once in middle school, and it's an interesting time of their lives, right, where it's critical that we engage students, that they're motivated, that they find mm-hmm. the relevance. So in the ELA classroom in middle school, what are some of your, you know, go-to strategies to create that relevance as kids are reading, they're close reading, they're summarizing, they're note taking, they're taking this all and making something out of it. Talk about.
So I think with today's day and age and everything being all about computers and technology, the more technology you can use, the better. So I know when we were doing Module E, we had started Module E before we read a novel with a lot of Nearpods, and the mm-hmm. kids actually got to pretend that they were like a character on the Alone show, mm-hmm. and they had to do a Nearpod on their location that they like picked out of a hat, and they're reading articles about this location, and they had to figure out central idea from this location. And so they're like reading information on a Nearpod. They're mm-hmm. answering like open-ended questions on the Nearpod. They got to turn and talk and discuss it. And then in the end, after they've read like a couple different articles on it, they got the actual official listing of survival skills items that they were allowed to choose to bring. And based on the information that they learned, they had to come up with what items that they would choose to bring and why. And then out of those 10 items, because you're only allowed to bring 10, out of those 10 items, they had to choose the three that they thought were the most important in order to survive. And so we had a day where they actually got to sit like in tables like this with four, and they had to share their three, and they had to explain and back it up as to why they were going to choose that. Mm. And then amongst them, they had to choose who had the best to be like the winner of the alone challenge. The kids thought it was phenomenal.
It sounds amazing.
It was so fun. And it then
sounds like something I would want to do. Mm-hmm.
And then it tied so perfectly into the book Hatchet, where this kid was alone.
Story
because
of survival.
His, yes. Mm-hmm. And the kids like were able to relate it, and they thought it was such a neat experience. And then when we were turning and talking and discussing, when we were talking about the book, I felt like they had so much more to add, mm-hmm. you know, and so much more to tie in and to discuss mm-hmm. with each other. So I thought it was like my favorite module this year so far.
So I think like Tracy's hitting the nail on the head. It has to be relevant, like a real world application. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just does. And that's for anybody. That's for us. We've been leaning on Zaretta Hammond's research that, you know, she's basically our brain is wired to kind of zero in or hone in on certain things and to be able to kind of fade away all the distractions. Yes. And in middle school particularly, there are a lot of social distractions mm-hmm. and a lot going on in their lives. And so she says that, you know, for your brain to really be like hooked and to ignite and get ready for learning, it has to be like cultivate curiosity. It has to elicit strong emotions.
Yes.
And she talks about that it has to be relevant, mm-hmm. right? And so we have embedded within our pilot curriculum, but I know our teachers across content areas are doing this as well, is like the why behind the lesson. Mm-hmm. You know, why do we study character interactions and how they contribute to the plot? Because it gives us a little window and little insight mm-hmm. into how people in the real world react mm-hmm. and respond and how there are these cause and effect relationships in the real life, right? Mm-hmm. And the actions we take have consequences or whatever the case may be. But so I think relevance is key. And a real world challenge, just the challenge alone, when they get to like do a friendly competition or debate, have a voice, have a say in what's going on, and it feels real and meaningful and not like we're doing this because we're just highlighting today just mm-hmm. because, then it loses its appeal to them, and rightfully so. But I was also thinking about how they're just social at mm-hmm. this age. I mean, they're just social. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're not going to walk into very many middle school classrooms and even intermediate elementary classrooms where they're just like all quietly working. mm-hmm. And actually, like if you think about the example from today, if all they're doing is highlighting mm-hmm. and never having the discourse to say like how and why does this impact the meaning mm-hmm. or tone of the text or whatever it is that you're doing, like we're missing out on really powerful learning opportunities. Mm-hmm. So I think in middle school, it's and even in elementary and high school, I'm sure, it's like they have to talk.
Yes.
And be able to build on each other's ideas and challenge each other's ideas. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I would say in the name of making it relevant and motivating and engaging.
Which is hitting on another high-yield instructional strategy, right? Teacher clarity. And that idea that in teacher clarity, every day in every lesson, every student understands what they're learning, mm-hmm. why it's important, right? And how they'll know they're successful. And that why is critical. I think
not to pass fast.
No,
not
right,
to
right.
you because know because you want to go to college.
Why, right, appealing to their why, not mm-hmm. necessarily our why, because mm-hmm. their why might not be the same as our mm-hmm. why. They don't think that far ahead. Oh, you're going to do this so you can graduate and go to college. Mm-hmm. We care about that.
Yeah.
And we should, but their need is more immediate.
Well, even like when we were reading the book Hatchet, there were so many teachable moments that just, they weren't scripted in the module. They just kind of happened.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And it's, you know, where the kids, you know, you get a moment to teach the kids, like, this kid is out in this wilderness alone. Mm. Like, he doesn't have mom to cook him dinner. Mm. He has to learn how to cope and figure things out. And they referenced in the book where he was thinking about, like, the things that he learned in school. Mm. And he's like, okay, in school, did they teach me, like, this is how you make fire. And he was like, no, they didn't. So I'm going to have to figure this out for myself, you know? And he's like, and my old English teacher had told me, like, you have to stay positive and you have to stay motivated in order to figure things out. And if you don't stay positive and you don't stay motivated, you will flounder. You will not make it. And then later in the book, he found himself being really upset and crying. And then he stopped and reflected on himself. And he thought, okay, this whole episode of crying got me nowhere. I'm still sitting in the same situation that I was just in. Mm-hmm. So that was a moment for me where we talked about like coping skills. And that is huge in middle school because a lot of middle school kids, they don't know how to cope. They don't know how to reason. And those are life skills that they need. So it's just like even taking what you're teaching and making it, like you said, relevant to their life now and making it a teachable moment, even if it just pops in your head, use it. If you feel it, go with it.
I think that you're describing some aha moments in your classroom, Tracy.
Absolutely. And I think that points to our district mission of having our students be prepared for college, career, and life.
That's right.
And these are skills that they can transfer into the life. And I was having an aha moment when you were speaking around if we stopped at the note-taking and we didn't have the students turn and talk. And it's like the students, when they share their thinking with each other and the things that sometimes start coming out of their mouths,
so
where they're
powerful.
Where they're using words like the tone of the story and that it took a turn when this happened, and you're just like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that this little body just formed those words because you couldn't have done it better. And it's so beautiful.
So speaking of aha moments.
Yeah. So on this podcast, that is the name, Aha Moments, we like to ask our guests, you know, what are some of your biggest aha moments around using the strategy around note-taking, transforming our notes into a product or a usable that really relevant applied learning type situation?
I think mine was at the beginning of this year, taking this new position from I started in middle school and then did my stint in elementary, and now I'm back to middle school. And I think I just keep going back to being consistent across the grade levels and having some common vocabulary and tools and things that students, because we want student agency. That's what we want. We want them to know what to do and when to do it and how to do it without the teacher saying, so what next? So what do this. And so I think by utilizing boxes and bullets across the K-8 essentially, and for writing, and even something as simple as the triple T strategy, where we're unpacking a prompt and what that means, and just other common, and I'm sure it's the same way in science and in math and in social studies, where let's give them a lot of different ones, right? And because some might stick better for students, but let's be really consistent in our like language and our purpose behind what we're doing. And I think that was an aha moment for me, is like, you know, it's just been a really cool experience to be able to be the bridge between like a fifth grader and a sixth grader and being like, we do this. This is exactly what we do. We call it this and your teacher's calling it this, but that is the same thing. And I think that's going to be really powerful for their whole career to be able to have that consistent terminology and different tools. And then the last thing I'll say about my aha moment is that I've had students, like, in the name of essay writing, where they're like, well, in my district, I'm new here, and we used treats, or we used this, and we didn't use boxes and bullets, or we did L, or I don't know, yippee-ki-yay, whatever it is that they use, and they feel almost bad to tell you, like, this is what works for me. And it's like, if at the end of the day, beautiful essay comes out on the other side, it's okay. And I think as teachers, we want to be like, no, do it like this and not allow them to have some autonomy on what works best for them.
Well, thank you for saying that, because as you were talking, you both referenced the boxes and bullets. And I thought to myself, boxes and bullets. I think we do need to explicitly teach our students these strategies because otherwise they'll be floundering. They're like holding a pen and like, I don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. But I think it's just kind of like math where we teach kids how to solve a problem multiple ways. I mean, you can do it the base 10 way. You can do it the algorithm way. Same way with note taking. You want to teach them multiple ways to take notes, and then you want to give them the autonomy to start choosing
what works for them.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So I think just thinking about what you were saying and carrying on, I think since I've had the experience of teaching elementary school for so many years, I taught kindergarten for 1 year, and then I taught fourth grade for 23 years, something. And there was a year back in Ohio where I taught second grade. So what is really interesting is now that this is my first year in sixth grade, I get to really see firsthand how what we teach builds off of one another. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So like
in a vertical alignment.
Yes, everything. And it's funny because even going back to the simple strategy of you start your sentences with capital letters. Why are you not starting with a capital letter? And I'm like, do you know how this is a kindergarten skill. And yes. I'm like, do you know how I know this? Because I taught kindergarten. Right. And I'm like, so you have to start your sentences with capital letters. And I'm like, even taking from in fourth grade, we did a big chunk on figurative language. And the kids were learning what each word meant. Mm-hmm. And then they were learning how to find it in text. And like, oh, there's a simile, or there's, you know, there's personification, or there's a metaphor, or there's, well, now we're taking that even another step. And now not only are they learning how to find it in the text, they're learning why. Like you said, like, okay, now the author specifically chose to use that on purpose. Why? What does it do to the text? How does it create tone? How does it create meaning in the text? Mm-hmm. So they're thinking like more critically and deeper about a text. And so everything builds off of one another. And there's so many times I find myself using my own strategies, my old strategies from elementary world into sixth grade, and they still work. It's not.
Yeah. I'm so glad that you went in that direction because I think selfishly, I have one final question for you both, is that when I met you both, you were both fourth grade teachers, and now you're in the middle school world. So my question would be this, that if you could go back to your fourth grade teacher self, now that you know what you know about middle school, what advice would you give to your fourth grade teacher self? What do kids need in fourth grade, maybe that, you know, a fourth grade teacher wants to hear to better prepare them for the middle school experience and beyond?
I think just letting the kids know that the strategies that we are teaching them, like the why, is so important. Mm-hmm. And I know we get busy and we just, you know, time's ticking and you're always like race against the clock. And you're like, let me get through this lesson. Now I got to get through this lesson. And when I taught fourth grade and was self-contained, you're like, well, we got to get to science and now we got to get to math. You miss that connection, you miss that why. And I think it's really important to teach the kids, like, this is why you're learning it. You're not just learning it, like you said, to pass the test. You're learning it because you're going to use this information moving forward. You're going to use it in middle school. You're going to use it in high school. Mm-hmm. We're writing essays until we're a senior. You have to write essays to be accepted into some colleges as part of the application process, you know? It's learning why you're doing it, because if they don't have that connection of why and the purpose in learning it, it's not going to mean anything to them, and they're not going to be engaged, and they're not going to care. So you have to help them be motivated and want to learn.
Love that.
I think my message would be that what you're doing matters in elementary school, and it's very much the foundation. And then in intermediate elementary, you could go in a fifth grade room and a sixth grade room or seventh grade room and honestly see really similar work being done. The text is getting more complex, but the thinking that's required, the kind of reading that's required is very much the same. So first and foremost, just keep on keeping on because it's going to pay off by the time they get to us. One of the things Holly and I have talked about in the past, because there is not a new terminology wise, there's very little in the ELA world where I don't dare to speak about math, but I'm sure it's very similar where you have to learn these foundations and then you build on them. The one brand new benchmark is our rhetoric benchmark.
Right.
And I did think to myself when I started this year and thought, oh, now I have to be responsible for the entire district's ability to understand rhetoric and complex text. But I think there's such a good opportunity in writing to use rhetorical appeals and devices as elaboration. And I thought second semester,
taking notes on this
fifth grade, you guys are going to come to us having a little preview and, you know, dipping your toe in the world of rhetoric. And because we use rhetoric all the time, and it's extremely easy to build relevance and the why behind it. But we don't tap into it, right? Because it's outside of our benchmarks. But very, very, very much it's relevant for writers. And I think that's a nice place to introduce it. So
I love that idea.
Yeah, well, wonderful. All right, well, we're going to start to wrap up this our time together today. But before we do, I want to I want to have you all hear a quote, and it's by John F. Kennedy, and it says this: "The goal of education is the advancement of knowledge and the dissemination of truth." What does that mean to you, and how does that play into our conversation today about note-taking and then transforming our notes into applied learning and knowledge?
I think, I mean, we've said this a couple of times today, but it's really the how, the what, and the why. So it's like, how are we learning? What is it that we're learning? And why are we learning it? So I think that goes back to, like, taking what you've learned and applying it, and then by them understanding why they're learning it, that's the trust. And it's like trust in the process and know that it's going to be challenging along the way. But you can do it. And I think that's like if they have trust, that's, you know, going to make them feel more comfortable in the knowledge. So
I agree. And I think that we are in the business of transfer. I mean, that's what it's all about. We are equipping them with tools and strategies and knowledge that is going to help them in wherever they end up going on their path. And I think that idea of application is huge. So we have to give them lots and lots of opportunities to apply their learning in the real world context, whether it's simulations or you know, helping them unpack and understand how this is matters and how it's meaningful to them today. I love the idea of real relevant application and hearing kids. In fact, a girl today in middle school, she was a sixth grader, said she found an illusion in the Taylor Swift song. And she wanted to tell me about the illusion. And, you know, I'm sorry if you're sick of hearing about Taylor Swift right now, but
not a bit.
No, I'm not. I'm not sorry at all. But and I just thought that's cool. That's really cool that she's starting to pick up on what she's doing in the classroom and recognizing that and applying that in her real life and getting excited about it. So I think that's the heart of our work. That's why we're here.
Yeah, wonderful. Anything you'd like to add?
I mean, just to say that, you know, when we think about knowledge and truth in the ELA classroom, you know, there's a lot to, there's a lot of work to do. I think that, you know, when we're reading informational text, right, we are doing so to build knowledge and understanding and, you know, talk back to the text and have ideas and thoughts, but read critically. You know, but in literary text, even is we're reading, and you talked about that beautiful example with Hatchet, right? We're building knowledge about the human condition.
Thank you.
So all such critical, important work from, you know, our youngest kids all the way up the grade levels, right? The human condition and the world around us. And so that's, you know, why we do what we do. And I'm so thankful to have you all leading the charge in middle school as you're engaging in this work.
No pressure.
Yeah. Well, thank you all for being here today. And I really acknowledge you for accepting Holly's invitation to come here. I mean, I'm blown away. I just the academic vocabulary that was just coming out in this conversation, so rich. I can tell that this is a group of educators who really know these standards inside and out and how to help our students make sense of that and do well in college and career and their life. So thank you so much for being here. And I want to say thank you again to Holly. She has hosted 2 episodes in a row with me, and it really has been a joy. I just like loved watching you and listening and the way that you're thinking. It's almost poetic. So thank
you.
Yes, thank you so much for being here. And for our listeners out there, be sure to tune in again next month for some more aha moments.
To a fist bump.
Yeah, good job, guys. Thank you.